Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
South Africa's water crisis is no longer a looming threat. It's here. From collapsing infrastructure to chemical contamination, headlines are now regularly including words like sewage, toxic, undrinkable. But what is really going on? And can it be fixed before we get past the point of no return? Joining me is Professor Anthony Turton. He is a leading voice of South Africa's water systems, and he's here to help us understand where the dangers really lie and what we can do about it. Professor Turton, thank you again for being with us. Let's start here. How safe is South Africa's tap water, and does it vary across regions?
Okay, good morning and thank you for having me. South Africa is a big place and it's got lots of variability across that large area that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. In general, your cities, for example, Johannesburg, Gauteng area, that's supplied by Rand Water in generally is high quality water. And that is controlled, you know, to a great extent by SANS 241, which is the standard for drinking water in South Africa. Now that opens up a lot of questions. The one question is SANS an appropriate standard? Because does it include all of the emerging contaminants that that research is now indicating are coming through the system? And of course the answer to that is no. So we're talking at some stage about the need to revise the SANS 241 standard, but that is unlikely to happen in the very, very short-term future. So while places like Rand Water are supplying water to that standard, it is not mandated or not required to be tested for these emerging contaminants. And I know one of them is this antiretroviral, in the water. So that is simply not part of the SANS 241 standard.
Well, would it be anywhere? I mean, is that a normal thing that they should have been testing for?
Well, yes and no. It's, you know, science is politicized, unfortunately. You know, we just need to look at the climate change debate and the dumbing down of science all over the world.
Yes.
So science, unfortunately, is dependent to a large extent on funding, and funding agencies, typically government or, you know, private sector, determine what the research agenda is. Now, when I was at the CSIR, I left the CSIR in 2008. I was actually suspended from the CSIR. And one of the reasons for that suspension was we were raising the alarm then already about return flows, what we refer to as return flows, which is sewage flowing back into rivers that becomes drinking water again. And at that point in time, we already had very strong scientific evidence that estrogen was coming back into the system.
Wow.
Now, estrogen was, estrogen is used widely in society as a birth control, a hormone replacement therapy for women, etc. So there's a very, very large amount of estrogen flowing into the system. And that all comes from partly metabolized waste going through the human body and ending up in the sewage systems. So at that point in time, we asked the question, if we know for a fact that estrogen is coming back, then what about antiretrovirals? Because we knew, for example, that antiretroviral use was very high in South Africa, but there was no research done on antiretroviral return flows. And that raised a lot of eyebrows and it got me into a lot of trouble, because ultimately, the response from the state was there is no evidence that antiretrovirals are coming back in the return flow, so therefore we don't have to test for it. So if you don't test for it, you're not going to find it.
Of course. Yeah.
And now, of course, people have started testing for it and they found it. But I mean, we predicted that within the scientific community as early as 2007, 2008. And the other thing that was raising its head at that point in time was a very, very competent research body at the CSIR was working on groundwater, and particularly what are known as phages, which are viral particles or viral entities that you found in groundwater. and particularly shallow groundwater, where it was found that these were mutating. They were mutating in response to contaminants that were going into the ground from the surface. So that caused us, in the water sector, to start asking if these contaminants. If these contaminants are coming through and altering viral structure and what have you, then what about antiretrovirals going back into the rivers? Could we not be seeing the same thing happening in river water from which drinking water is extracted? So that's the whole background.
So is that what you mean when I know that you in the past have spoken about institutional erosion? Is this really what you're referring to?
Yes, so there were a lot of factors at play, but yes, institutional collapse, institutional erosion, the unwillingness to grasp the realities, of the fact that we faced in South Africa with a major population growth. I mean, in the last 40 years, the population has trebled. Trebled population in 40 years. That means we should have trebled all the sewage works. It means we should have trebled the number of schools. We should have trebled the number of hospitals, and none of that has been done.
So that was really where I wanted a political concern, because that really is trying to understand if our water crisis is infrastructure collapse or is it resource scarcity. Or a combination.
Okay. Well, it is clearly an infrastructural collapse. The resource scarcity argument that's put forward is generally it's a moot point. It doesn't really hold water. It's simply an infrastructure collapse thing, and part of that is the politicization of science. Because when science, is trying to do its job and trying to create forewarning and trying to guide where in which direction policy should go. Then science is muted. Its funding is taken away and it's harassed by the state. So that's the state of play today. But I'm not surprised that we've got antiretrovirals in the water now.
Yeah, because you called it the world back.
And we see the emergence of new things now. Like PFASs. Your microplastics and stuff like that.
Yes.
That's a big emerging issue now globally. Mm. And why would South Africa be any different?
Right. So if you were put in charge of water policy tomorrow, what's the first thing you would do?
Well, water quality. I think for me the big crisis in South Africa, as I pointed out in my 2008 paper that got me suspended. I keep going back to that thing because in essence we've lost our dilution capacity in rivers. So that's the first problem. We can no longer dilute our pollution. And once we accept that as a fundamental principle, then the next thing now is, so what are we going to do about it? And that means that we have to start really taking our sewage crisis seriously. Because the South African water system, the entire reticulation of water in the country, is based on a policy known as indirect reuse. So in other words, water goes through wastewater treatment plants and again gets discharged into rivers at a very high quality because it is going to become drinking water for somebody else. Mm. So unless and until we get hold of that, get on top of that that wastewater crisis in the country, then I'm afraid we're not going to make any progress. So that, to me, would be the priority. And the second priority would then be to accept that we've reached the limit of our readily available water, and therefore we have to start investing heavily in science, engineering, and technology to recover water from waste, to recover water from the ocean in a way that's safe, understanding that the water is increasingly polluted by the things we're talking about today.
That is 100%. That is where we leave it. Professor Anthony Turton, keep fighting the good fight. He's a professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State. Give me your reaction. 0618951019. It is 6:44. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.